They looked like some peculiar amalgam of human and snake. One of Tag's captors waved at an approaching snake person with a single working eye. The other eye appeared glossy and scarred over, along with the rest of its battered face. The scarred snake person opened its mouth, and something between a hiss and a series of clicks echoed out. The pirate took off its helmet. Its face appeared just like that of the other people milling around this underground base. It shoved Tag forward, and the scarred snake person caught him. He hissed, then turned, leading Tag abruptly away from the three suited people. The other two had taken off their helmets and trudged back to one of the dark metal buildings. "Where are you taking me?" Tag asked the snake person, his voice coming out raspy. The snake person looked at Tag with its one good eye narrowed. It gave no vocal response, but continued guiding Tag. It motioned for him to remove his helmet. But Tag didn't trust these people, and he didn't trust the sensors. Just because there was enough oxygen in the air didn't mean there wasn't some unknown poison waiting to kill him. Yet as the snake person guided him away from the base and onto another path, Tag got the feeling this person didn't want to harm him. The snake person had one hand on his shoulder, but it didn't squeeze. There was no pistol pressed to his back. Something else bothered him. He felt eyes watching him from between the branches and vines, but everywhere he looked, he saw nothing but glowing plants or large, insect-like creatures meandering over the underbrush. While Tag heard more bird calls, buzzing insects, and gurgling water, there was another sound growing louder. It seemed like the rhythmic drumbeat he'd heard earlier was becoming more intense and furious with each step they took. The pounding of the drums grew louder. Each beat reverberated in his chest and made him wince. The roar of a waterfall grew in concert with the drumming. The cacophony became loud enough to pierce Tag's EVA suit, and he cringed, wishing he could put his hands over his ears. He almost thought about taking off his helmet so he could do just that, but he couldn't bring himself to trust this snake person or the atmosphere. They soon passed by the noise's source. Tag expected to see the snake people situated in some kind of odd drum circle. Instead, there was only a giant machine. Primitive, really. It was constructed of timber that appeared to have been cut from the luminescent trees of the underground rainforest. The waterfall powered a wooden water wheel. As the wheel spun, it activated a large arm with a counterweight. The arm acted as a drumstick and pounded against a massive leather hide stretched taut. The entire drumhead seemed at least 8 meters across. Tag's mouth went agape. The hide consisted of a single piece of leather. He'd hate to run into the creature that hide came from. The snake person didn't seem a bit distracted by the contraption. He guided Tag onward as they trudged over fallen leaves and snaking roots. They left the racket of the drum machine behind and started winding through a narrower path. Tag definitely felt eyes on him now. He could see shapes flit between the trees, but these shapes were shorter and squatter than the snake people. Must be another alien race, Tag thought. His senses and mind were overloaded by so many new sights and sounds, he was certain the scent of this foreign environment would overwhelm him should he finally take his helmet off. But every foreign creature and plant he'd seen so far hadn't prepared him for what stood waiting for him at the end of the path. A woman. A real, human woman. Chapter 28. She stood there with a half-smirk and wore a standard-issue SRE bodysuit with the sleeves and legs cut short. Dried white paint with red stripes covered her skin, and she peered at him with gleaming brown eyes beneath the face paint. Her coffee-colored hair was tied up, presumably to cope with the heat of the jungle. Tag felt an almost unquenchable urge to run to her, as if they were old friends. He hadn't expected the overwhelming emotions flooding him at the sight of another human being alive and in front of him, but he restrained himself. "You're the anthropologist." "The lieutenant, Dr. Sophia Vasquez," Tag managed. "Yep, that sounds a bit pretentious. Just call me Sophia." With no EVA mask of her own, he could clearly see the shallow furrows in her brow when she said, "Welcome to the Forest of Light on ETA 5. "Aptly named," Tag said, still in shock. "Sure is. There's no such thing as day or night down here. It's like staying at a hotel in New Vegas or the Main Strip. And as much as I'm looking forward to getting back to Earth and doing some vacationing, I thought I had another 2 days before rendezvous. Or did I not properly keep track of the time?" "Yes. Yes, that's right," Tag said. Words jumbled over his tongue as he struggled for what to say next. So much had happened, and he had so many questions. But he figured he'd start with the most immediate. He turned to the scarred snake person, then back to the woman. "These people tried to kill me. Are they friendly to you?" The woman laughed. "Friendly isn't the word I'd use to describe them in the colloquial sense." Tag stepped back from the snake person. "But don't worry, I don't think they'll hurt you." "They already shot me," Tag said. The snake person's mouth opened and he emitted a series of rushed noises that sounded vaguely like words. Vasquez's eyes went wide as if she understood what he was saying. She held her hands out in a supplicating gesture. "Ah, there must have been some mistake then. Yes?" The snake person's nostrils flared and more mangled words escaped his lips. Tag stared at him with his brows scrunched. He tried to discern the snake person's intent, to no avail. Vasquez must have seen his expression. "Ah, wait a second." She reached into a pocket and pulled out a small device. "Still got a few backups. No good ET anthropologist leaves home without one." Tag held out his gloved hand and she dropped the tiny device into it. He recognized its purpose. "Need to take that helmet off first," she said. The moment of truth. Tag undid the latches under his helmet and lifted it. He took a timid breath, just enough to test the air. Nothing tasted poisonous, and Vasquez seemed to be fine. He sucked in deeper and almost choked on the sweetness. All the smells of the foliage and fresh water and rich soil overwhelmed him, and he coughed. "Ah, I never forgot my first breath," Vasquez said. "Intoxicating, isn't it?" Tag tried to nod as he recovered from his coughing fit. Once he breathed normally again and realized he wouldn't suffocate, he placed the small device Vasquez had given him in his ear canal. It fit snugly and, once in place, emitted a short hiss of static. Then it went quiet. "Is this thing working?" he asked. "I don't know. You tell me, human," the snake person said, glaring at him. Tag almost jumped in surprise. He calmed his hammering heart and looked back at the snake person. Can you understand me?" He thought he saw the snake person roll his good eye. "Of course. Our technology is far more sophisticated than yours. It's simple enough to pick up on the primitive nuances of human languages." With that settled, Tag's mind raced. "What do you intend to do with me?" The snake person held a slender hand over his narrow chest. "Me? I'd prefer to have nothing to do with you, but Sophia insisted we bring you down as soon as we realized you were a human." The snake person shrugged. "Surprised to see you here at all, to be honest." Tag looked for a further explanation, but the snake person didn't give him one. "We've got a lot of catching up to do." Sophia paused, cocked her head, and squinted at the name badge on his EVA suit. "Lieutenant Commander Brewer, Chief Medical Officer. Not a name I recognized from the rendezvous committee." "Like you said, we've got a lot of catching up to do." Tag was ready to start his story, but Sophia held a hand up. "We really can't get into this now," she motioned to her painted body. "If we don't make our hosts happy, there won't be time to tell stories." "But..." A sardonic grin crossed her face and she nodded at the snake person. "No, really, we can't leave them waiting. Just ask Corin how he got his scars." The snake person, Corin, made no reply, staying straight-lipped and serious. Tag couldn't tell if he should believe Sophia. "I take it you didn't come to this planet to study his people." Corin let out a gruff exhalation that sounded derisive to Tag. "Study us? Ha! Not on this damned planet." "Then, come on," Sophia said, leading them on. She gave Tag a grave look. "You need to be quiet from here on out. Not a goddamned word unless I tell you. Got it?" Tag nodded. "Understood." There's a catch to you being here, and the only way you'll live is if you do exactly what I say. Tag frowned at Corin.
I thought you weren't going to hurt me.
Not me. Not my people, Corin said.
Let's move, Vasquez said. We don't have much time, and I've got to introduce you to the Forinths.
Chapter 29. A low humming sounded around the woods. It was like the buzzing of insect wings, but Tag swore it was coming from the round shapes shadowing them from the trees. He tried to get a better look at these beings, but they seemed to fade into the foliage every time he thought he'd spotted one. As they walked, he worked on the wrist terminal interface of the EVA suit, overriding the controls for the healing salve and painkiller doses. The cool wave of both concoctions flowing through his vessels made his shoulders relax, and he sighed with relief. But his mind continued worrying at a breakneck pace. He had questions, so many questions. For Sophia and Corin. But the expression on Sophia's face had made the warning quite clear. He trudged behind her, holding his aching shoulder and wondering when he'd finally get some answers. Tag walked near Sophia. She grabbed his upper arm, puffed out her chest, and marched with determination. And from the corner of her mouth she spoke, "This is going to be weird. You're going to be scared, but just don't say anything or scream or anything. Don't protest. Don't struggle. They're going..." She stopped mid-sentence and started humming a low, sweeping melody. Corin joined in, looking straight ahead. Tag was confused, but attempted to display only stoicism in his expression and gait. The song Corin and Sophia sang was accompanied by several other voices. Through his periphery, Tag tried to identify the source of the swelling chorus, but once again, he saw only shadows moving between the tree trunks and shrubbery. The other voices grew and bolstered the haunting melody. Goosebumps formed along Tag's skin. It wasn't from the temperature, gods, no, definitely not the temperature. As they marched on, as the voices began to crescendo, the air grew thick with hot humidity and the rotten stink of sulfur. Sweat matted Sophia's dark hair and beads rolled down her neck. But she made no move to wipe them. Perspiration dripped over Tag's face. An instinctual urge begged him to clear the sweat, but Sophia's warnings echoed in his mind. He carried on, silent and anxious. Soon the pathway opened to a clearing. The wide space wasn't illuminated by luminescent grass or glowing fronds. The soil was barren and dark. In the middle of the open circle was a single mound, but it was no innocuous bump in the dirt. A hole, at least 10 meters across, belched steam and yellow gas. Orange and red light flickered from it like a fire was burning from within. A volcano, Tag thought. Small, sure, but a volcano nonetheless. Tag had to remind himself to breathe. He sucked in a mouthful of air. It was wretched. A metallic taste lingered in his mouth with each inhalation. The closer they came to the incipient volcano, the louder the music from the woods became. Soon, it was no longer humming, but unbridled singing. The melodic voices rang out with a rich range, from the deepest lows to the highest highs. The music almost carried Tag away, threatening to put him into a stupor. But he reminded himself, he was in danger. Whatever beauty might be found in this music was outweighed by the threat to his life Sophia had warned about. Sophia and Corin came to a stop. Both still humming in tune with the ghostly choir, they motioned for him to stand between them. He took a single step and stood, frozen and silent. The entire clearing shimmered. Tag fought back a surprised gasp. Glowing red eyes appeared first, then the shimmering settled like falling snow. Creatures seemed to teleport around him all at once. No, it wasn't teleportation. He realized these creatures had been here all along. But they were like chameleons, capable of altering the color of their flesh to blend in. Their bodies were slender and small, and they had bulbous heads. Each eye shifted colors as they all stared at Tag. He felt unprotected and naked despite his EVA suit. Their hypnotizing, color-changing eyes flashed, trance-like.
Then their entire bodies lit up in bursts of fluorescent colors. Tag wanted to laugh and scream in horror at the same time. Was he still on the Argo? Had he overdosed on painkillers? But the bite of the sulfurous air, the now fervent voices, and the bright flares of color were all too real. This was no dream, no nightmare. He guessed these creatures were the Forinths. Sophia and Corin raised their arms slowly, fanning them. The creatures responded, except instead of two arms, they raised eight each. And each arm had no hand. Rather, they appeared to be tentacles. The Forinths looked like evolved terrestrial octopuses. All at once, the voices quieted. The people closed their beak-like mouths and their arms froze. Their skin went white with red stripes. Just like Sophia's body paint, Tag noted. One of the Forinths stepped forward. Its skin turned a shocking blue. All the others pointed their tentacles at it, and the blue Forinth glided toward Tag, Corin, and Sophia. It aimed one tentacle at Sophia. She took a deep breath, then belted out a series of high notes with the timbre of a practiced vocalist. The blue one sang something in response, and Sophia made a sweeping bow, then gestured toward Tag. Once again, the color-changing eyes all locked on him. It took every ounce of control he had to remain still. He pretended that he was standing at attention, ready to receive an admiral aboard the Argo. Sophia crooned another short melody, and the blue Florinth faded back into the crowd. Just then, a staccato off-key note sounded from a Forinth. The crowd parted, and each stared accusingly at the offender. The blue one marched to the singled-out Forinth and grabbed them. The offending Forinth's colors shifted wildly, pink, then purple, then green, then yellow. The shifting colors conveyed a distinct feeling of panic to Tag. He watched in silent horror as the blue one lifted the color-changing Forinth above its head. It walked to the nascent volcano. All the voices rose in a fast-moving song, hammering Tag's eardrums. He clenched his jaw and his whole body felt tight as the blue one tilted its head back. Its beaked mouth opened in a primal, gut-wrenching yell, and it threw the color-changing Forinth into the volcano. The plummeting Forinth let out a pitiful screech. Its scream echoed, piercing the song of the others for what seemed to Tag like minutes. It may have only been a matter of seconds, but he was too shocked to tell the difference. Then the blue one turned to him. Its eyes seemed narrow, and it padded along the dirt, careening for him. Sophia's hands clenched into fists, and she started singing louder, staring straight ahead. The blue one wrapped its tentacles around Tag's shoulder. It was surprisingly strong, even through his EVA suit. He winced as the creature tightened its grip around his injury, but bit his lip to refrain from uttering any sound. The blue one guided him to the center of the clearing. It lifted Tag above its head. Tag wanted to yell, to struggle out of the Forinth's grasp, but one glance at Sophia told him not to. The blue one held him above the hole, straight to ETA-5's hell. Waves of intense heat washed over him. He could hear the growling belly of the planet through this volcanic vent, and the sulfurous odor irritated his eyes and assaulted his nostrils. His body went rigid, wondering if he should still heed Sophia's warning. If he was going to fight back, this was his last chance. Chapter 30. The blue Florinth unraveled its tentacles and let Tag go. Hot waves of sulfurous air rose from the depths of the volcano, buffeting Tag. In that moment, anger and despair flooded through him, but he gritted his teeth, refusing to scream like the Forinth they'd sacrificed. He wouldn't give them any pleasure in his death. Then, almost as soon as he started plummeting to the fiery bowels of ETA-5, something grabbed him under his arms. A tentacle. It tightened around his chest, pushing the air out of his lungs until his bruised ribs ached. The single tentacle retracted and yanked him from the volcano. What game is this animal playing? Tag thought. He wrapped his fingers around the sinewy tentacle, refusing to let the monster drop him again. Screw whatever Sophia had said about playing dead and letting these Forinths treat him like their plaything. The blue Florinth hoisted him above the sweltering pit and raised him in the air once more.
Tag opened his mouth to protest, his face already heating more from rage than from the volcano, but the boa constrictor-like grip the Forinth had on him prevented him from uttering so much as a miserable squeak. The Forinth's eyes caught Tag's, and a soft melody drifted from its beaked mouth, almost like a lullaby. Bemused but wary, Tag clenched his fists, his muscles tightening. Still, something eerily comforting in the Blue Forinth's song crashed against the embattled emotions thundering through Tag's mind. His fury gave way to a strange sense of comfort, as if he unconsciously knew he stood among friends and family. His fingers unclenched and his muscles relaxed. The Forinth set him down. Tag fell into a trance as if he'd been slipped a sedative, all thoughts of danger and alarm drifting out of his head. The Forinth dipped its tentacle in a shell of some sort that another Forinth held. When it withdrew its arm, the tip was covered in red paint, and it smeared the paint over Tag's face. With the painting done, the Forinth's mouth closed, and its song ended. Tag's survival instincts returned, and he began to back away from the Forinth. His shirt clung to his back with sweat, and his fingers trembled with the surging adrenaline. He held his hands before him like a wrestler, ready to do battle with the Blue Forinth. But the alien didn't pounce on him. Instead, it waved its tentacles toward Sophia and Corin as if to urge Tag to return to them. He did so with tentative steps, never taking his eyes off the creature. When he joined Sophia and Corin, they each bowed deeply, and the entire Forinth host dissipated into the woods, their flesh sparkling like fireflies until they disappeared entirely, blending into the trees and foliage. Their invisible retreat into the forest sounded not like a tribe of creatures stamping over dry branches and leaves, but more like the soft whisper of a breeze through tree limbs. Sophia shot Tag a meaningful look with her brows furrowed and lips pursed, no doubt a simple gesture to indicate he should remain silent. The trio departed the clearing and left the sulfurous air and insufferable heat behind as they marched over the path they'd traveled on. Once they'd walked for more than a click, Sophia finally broke stride and slowed. She used the back of her hand to wipe the sweat off her brow and let out a long exhalation. "Sorry about that," she said. "We can talk now?" Tag asked, his eyes wide. "Yes, we can." God damn it, what just happened? He couldn't restrain himself. Here he'd come to whisk this anthropologist off the planet, and she'd subjected him to some kind of tribal social experiment. He'd always been interested in meeting intelligent life as a kid, reading about both fictional and non-fictional adventures of scientists in the field, but he'd had enough. No more so-called intelligent life for him. I didn't come down here to have some crazy species sacrifice me to their damned gods. No, you didn't, Sophia said, a slight grin breaking across her face, irritating Tag more. Oh, what's so damn funny? His mouth went dry. Your reaction. My reaction. I almost died. No, as long as you did what I said, you were good. They don't normally kill newcomers anyway, right, Corin? The snake person seemed to give her an exasperated look. No, they wouldn't exactly kill you, but you damn sure wish they threw you into that pit. He gestured to his scars. I fought back. Sophia told me not to when I first came to the planet, but I didn't listen. And this is what I got for it. Those tentacles pack a lot of punch, as Sophia so often says. She nodded and held back a frond blocking their path. They have small bone-like blades at the end of each. When they want to hurt you, they have no qualms about it. And they're strong, Corin said, stronger than our power suits. Some of my people learned that the hard way, too. Tag had so many more questions. His head began to pound with confusion as he glanced between Corin and Sophia dubiously. One thing at a time, he reminded himself, compartmentalize and proceed. None of that really answers my question. No patience, Sophia said, indicating for them to follow a turn in the path. They were holding what I've come to call a balance ceremony. They recognized that the resources in the Forest of Light might look vast, but they're limited, and if the population grows too large, they threaten to upend the balance they've achieved over the generations of living here.
Balance ceremony, Tag muttered. The pieces started to come together. So that sacrifice was because there's new life down here?
Precisely, Sophia said.
A spring of guilt bubbled up in Tag.
The one that died, that was sacrificed, was that on my account?
Sophia laughed and Tag scowled at her. How could she be so brutally callous about a species and culture she was studying?
No, she said, don't be so arrogant. They don't care about our species.
A new baby was born to one of the family units. Another thing far too complex for me to explain now. When a baby is hatched, one of the old ones has to go.
That's it? The oldest?
Doesn't matter if they're important or not?
Right, Sophia said. Very straightforward, no-frills tradition, huh?
I'm not sure about no-frills. His body still felt like it was overheating. He pulled at his EVA suit's collar. What was my role in all of this?
The Forinths insist on introducing each Forest of Light newcomer to their gods.
I went through it, Corin went through it, and all his people went through it. Once you've been dropped into the volcano and they let you dangle there, they seem satisfied to live and let be. You don't bother them, and they'll no longer bother you.
But don't mistake that for being ignored. You never know when they're watching.
Right, that color-changing flesh. Remarkable. But as interesting as they are, Tag stared daggers at Corin. I want to know why your people attacked me.
He'd been so distracted by the Forinths and the strange power their music had over him that he'd almost forgotten the reason he'd found himself here in the first place. His hand instinctively inched to the empty holster on his suit, and he wished he had some weapon, any weapon.
We thought you were hostile, Corin said. His expression remained stolid, unexcited. It's as simple as that.
I don't buy it. You don't just massacre a ship full of people without warning because you thought they were hostile.
Corin's good eye twitched, narrowing slightly. A ship full of people? There was no one else in your air car.
Of course there wasn't, Tag said, frustration welling up in him, because everyone else was already dead before the Argo landed on this planet. You can't tell me all that was a mistake, too.
Corin glanced between Tag and Sophia. His statue-like seriousness began to fade, replaced with something that looked akin to worry.
Your ship was attacked?
Suspicion crept into Tag's thoughts. It was difficult to read this alien's sincerity, but it certainly appeared as if he was shocked.
Yes, that's exactly right. By a cutter-sized vessel with your people aboard.
You're certain it was my people.
They boarded us. I saw them face to face, or at least their armor. They wore the same black armor and orange visors I saw down here on your people.
Tag recalled the attacker he'd taken down outside the forest. Only theirs seemed to have working energy shields.
Sophia held a hand up to stop Corin from responding, then indicated a small shack constructed of thick logs and branches.
This is my place. Should we go inside?
She eyed the trees around them suspiciously.
Sounds like we have a few things to discuss.
Chapter 31. The interior of Sophia's shelter proved hardly more alluring than its exterior. A hollow projection module sat on a crude wooden table next to a collection of comm equipment and pieces of a sensor array she appeared to be in the middle of working on. A picture, an actual printed 2D photograph, was pinned to the wall. It showed an older woman and man with Sophia. They all shared the same ruddy complexion. Before Tag had long to study it, Sophia mentioned for them to sit around the meager furniture. Tag took a worn canvas chair, and Sophia sat on the edge of her SRE Navy-issued cot. She caught Tag eyeing it.
Yep, it's still as uncomfortable as training. She grabbed a cloth and began dabbing at the paint on her skin.
cheap and portable enough for missions like this and just stiff enough to make you wonder if you'd be better off sleeping on the ground. A little bit of humor did nothing to buoy Tag's dour mood, and her smile soon vanished as Corin settled on a log repurposed as a stool. Tag undid his suit enough to scratch at the now-healing wound on his shoulder. Sophia, eyeing the singed flesh, dug into a pack and took out a first aid provisions pack. She tossed it to Tag, and he caught it. "Thanks," he said, then started rummaging through it. "Did you see others?" Corin asked. "Others? You mean besides your people?" Tag shot back. He pulled a tissue regen patch from his pack and taped it over the wound. "No, just the one cutter? No larger ships? No fleet?" Tag shook his head, setting the pack down. "Just the cutter." Corin's good eye closed. The lid on his scarred white eye fluttered as if it was trying to shut. A long exhalation escaped his thin lips. "Good." "Why's that good?" Fresh heat flowed into Tag's cheeks. His knuckles went white as he clenched his hands into fists. "Every single person aboard the Argo died. We have a much larger ship, a well-trained crew, and that little cutter boarded us and then sent the ship headed straight to ETA to burn." Sophia's eyes went wide and she stopped wiping the paint from her arm.
"You mean they didn't let you go?"
"No, of course not." Tag was aghast. "They seemed to have every intention of killing me."
That's almost unbelievable," she said. "Their technology, their ships, even a small cutter could take on an SRE light cruiser and win."
"Tell me something new," Tag said. "How did you escape?" Corin asked. "Why do you want to know?" Tag asked, his brow furrowed. "So you can make sure it doesn't happen again?"
"No," Corin smoothed out the short black fur along his scalp and neck. "Like Sophia said, that's quite the feat. Luck or skill, you've somehow survived an attack I doubt many of your comrades could."
"And how in the three hells would you know that?" Tag gritted his teeth, leaning forward in his chair.
"I used to be an engineer aboard a research vessel about the size of one of your battle cruisers."
"Used to be?"
"Our ship and its crew of 2,000 landed on ETA-5.
His eye traced the dirt floor.
"It's as far as we made it."
"The more you talk, the less I understand about all of this. Why did I watch people like yours murder my crewmates? I deserve a proper explanation."
"Don't we all?" Corin said.
He sat straighter. The pointed ends of his fingers drummed over the log.
"Let me try to put this all in context."
"Oh, please do," Tag said sardonically. He folded his arms over his chest.
"Tag," Sophia said, rubbing a spot of stubborn paint on her leg, "I get your skepticism, but I assure you, Corin and his people, at least those on ETA-5, are not the same ones that attacked your ship. You're going to have to believe me and Corin on this one. Try to keep an open mind."
The flames of anger flickered over Tag's mind again. Flashes of Kaufman and Morgan and Captain Weber appeared there, all the crew members he couldn't save. The people he was sworn to protect, to heal, their lives spilling between his fingers like flowing water.
"Fine," was all he said.
It was impossible to dismiss the memories and emotions surging through him, but he kept his lips straight and shut, willing to at least listen to Corin. Maybe he'd actually learn something useful about these monstrous people.
"Thank you," Corin said. "You will need to, as your people say, bear with me." Tag grunted. "First, when you arrived here, we thought you were a threat."
Tag opened his mouth to protest. Corin held up a hand, trying Tag's patience, but he saw the look in Sophia's brown eyes and closed his mouth again, using every ounce of self-control to listen to this snake person. Once he forced his countenance to appear amenable again, she handed him the cloth. He took it and wiped the paint from his face.
"Go on," Tag said. "Why did you think I was a threat?" I'm speaking of your arrival in the air car, Corin said. I believe the ship you ran into was our enemy as well. The people here are all that remains of my ship, and... Corin paused, a sorrowful expression etching his slightly reptilian features. We may truly be the last free members of our society. Chapter 32. Let me start at the beginning. My name is Koreno Jadajo, Corin said. The name seems to be hard for Sophia to pronounce, so I go by Corin for her benefit, and I assume yours as well. Tag tried to mouth Corin's full name silently, but it felt clumsy. Like I said, Corin is fine. He waved a long-fingered hand dismissively. I'm originally from the planet Makara, which is the homeworld for the Majar Mdradajo, my species. Again, the intricacies and nuances of the words cannot be replicated by your vocal cords or anatomy, so I'd advise you not to bother. I've already tried, Sophia said. Corin is patient, but if you mispronounce their proper name to another, they don't take kindly to the offense. It's better just to call them by a nickname. She's correct, Corin added. I call them the mechanics, Sophia said. While my primary mission focused on the Forinths, when the mechanics arrived, I got a chance to immerse myself in the study of two completely different species and cultures. Happy to be a test subject, Corin said with a hint of what sounded to Tag like sarcasm. You know you like the attention, Corin, Sophia said, cracking a mischievous smile. She faced Tag again, and he saw a fiery passion light up as she spoke. This was likely the first time she'd spoken to another human about any of her findings or experiences over the past years. I nicknamed them the mechanics because they truly are evolved to work with their hands, more so than us humans. We've got thumbs, but they have triple-jointed limbs, and their fingers are so flexible and strangely jointed that each of the six can function like pseudo-thumbs. You should see their natural adeptness with all things technological. I appreciate the flattery, Corin said, although Tag could tell he didn't appreciate it at all. But technology is crucial to our survival, he sighed. Our bodies aren't so strong, and I regret to say, evolution didn't empower us with the endurance and strength you humans and these Forinths share. Tag had never felt human beings were particularly strong compared to other life forms on Earth and some of the alien species they'd encountered, but he wasn't about to argue the point. Corin's limbs were extremely thin, as was his torso. Technology was our only mechanism of survival, Corin continued. But it wasn't enough. My ship was on duty, investigating ETA-5. Why did you need an entire cruiser-sized vessel for a research expedition? Tag asked, not buying the story. As I said, technology is crucial to us. Not just on our planet, but beyond. Space has not been friendly, and neither have its inhabitants. Most we have dealt with through brute force. Our power now comes from lessons learned over a millennium of space travel and exploration. Our people prefer to be careful. That's why our research vessels are well armed, though our troops aren't quite as well outfitted as our warships. You saw how our ground troops don't have energy shields like the Marines that belong to our warfaring vessels do, Corin said.
May I? Sophia asked, looking at Corin. He nodded and looked away.
It was hard to get this out of Corin, and no other mechanic would speak to me about it, but their population is in decline. Their resources in nearby solar systems were depleted by war, and the truth is, they can't lose expeditionary vessels and science vessels. They can't take the risks we can. A glimmer of pity crossed her face. From my estimates, their culture and species are endangered. And that was before what we call the mutiny incident. Corin nodded somberly. We were several light years away from Makara. He paused, staring at some unseen spot in the distance. An expression of grief filled his face. His thin lips twitched. His good golden eye shimmered. So we never knew what happened until we were on the last leg of our return to the planet.
Was this the incident? Tag asked.
Yes. Tag could sense the sincerity in Korin's words. Maybe the mechanic was good at manipulating human emotions, but Tag wanted to believe him. He forced himself to remain skeptical. This all might be a trap. But then again, what did they want with him? He'd be dead if they really wanted him to be. Once we arrived in normal space, we were inundated with distress calls. Our normal docking station orbiting Makara was wrecked, spewing atmosphere, chunks of debris, even bodies frozen in vacuum. A shudder crawled through Tag at the grisly imagery.
And these distress calls, they were coming from the station?
Not just the station, but also the ships, broken and shattered, floating lifeless next to the station. The distress calls were on automated repeat.
The rest of your species was eradicated then?
No, Korin replied, standing. He started pacing the small room. The distress calls mentioned exactly who the attackers were.
Who?
Korin paused. Us.
Chapter 33.
I don't understand, Tag said. Was there a civil war?
There wasn't when we left my planet, Korin said. Instead, according to the distress signals we received, almost a quarter of our people turned hostile. We saw no signs of vessels from other species, destroyed or otherwise.
Turned hostile?
It was some act of rebellion. Only there was no clear reason why. There was internal conflict within ships, between ships, on the planet. Korin's thin nostrils flared. On our approach to Makara, we saw one heavy cruiser drifting, mostly undamaged from the orbital station. When we saw it wasn't sending out any distress signals, we hailed it. They returned a single message asking, "Where does your loyalty lie?" My captain said, "To the Majar Mtaradajo, of course." And with that, they opened fire on us. Our ship couldn't withstand the onslaught. The bridge was destroyed almost immediately. Pulse fire riddled our sidewalls before we could even get our energy shields up. Due to that single attack, as the chief engineering officer, I became captain of the MES Stalwart, a duty I neither wanted nor deserved.
Korin tucked his chin against his chest.
At that moment, I knew we wouldn't survive long against them. I directed the Stalwart to retreat to the safest place I knew. Here.
Sophia nodded. ETA-5's atmosphere is both our boon and bane. The mechanics were interested in the planet for the same reason the SRE was. It was not just about the Forints. There's something in the atmosphere. The strange gravitational and energy fields that masks all communications and signals. It muddles every sensor array the mechanics and humans have developed.
Yes, Korin said. And since I hadn't reported that information back to Makara yet, I had hoped to use those phenomena to my advantage.
So far, we haven't caught any mechanic ship probing the planet, Sophia added. And thankfully, we're shielded underground from any curious scout ships that might venture to the planet's surface.
Tag mulled over the reluctant captain's story. I still don't understand why your people turned against each other or why they attacked me. I regret to say that even though we've tried to figure that out,
Korin's expression appeared vaguely human, almost remorseful.
We still aren't sure.
Korin granted me access to the data they had left, Sophia said. We scoured the recorded distress signals and comms together.
The best explanation we came up with was also one of the strangest, Corin added. Sophia booted her holocomputer. This is one of the VidCom messages we recovered. An almond-shaped head floated on the holo screen with a face much like Corin's. Only when this one spoke, the voice sounded distinctly feminine through Tag's translation device.
Captain Nadrine of the MES Gallant. Almost a third of our crew has mutinied. My XO was killed when he met with the mutineers. They have no demands and no interest in bargaining. I am locked in the bridge with only 4 of the original 12 bridge crew. 5 officers attempted to overtake my watch, but we prevailed. I cannot be certain what happened to incite such violence. Medical officer Bajir suspects some kind of virus, but we have been unable to verify these assumptions.
Sophia gestured over the holocomputer. No VidCom images appeared. Instead, a haunting voice shouted over the tinny sounds of explosions and gunfire.
They're like drones. They don't respond like normal people. Something's wrong with them.
Sophia paused the recording. That message is why we call the mutinous mechanics drone mechs. Another recording played. In this one, the voice came out like a whisper.
The best way I can describe these people is that they're acting like robots. It doesn't make sense. I've seen them demand to know, and I quote, "Wherein does your loyalty lie?" They blew several officers away in pulse fire when the officers didn't give them an answer they liked. I ran, and I'm hiding here in life support on the MES Lancer. If you should see our ship approach, proceed with caution.
Sophia clicked off the computer. There are more recordings like that, similar occurrences on other ships and orbital stations, along with broadcasts from Makara.
Bizarre, Tag said.
He searched his mind for reasons for such abhorrent behavior. The SRE had overtaken Earth by sowing discord within the UN and pitting individual member states against each other. Could this be similar? Had something or someone manipulated the mechanics?
Have your people been in contact with any new species?
No, Corin said. None that I'm aware of.
Of course, you can't account for the time between your trip to and from ETA 5, Sophia said.
True, Corin said. There would have been a limited time during our expedition here and through hyperspace when any communications, emergency or otherwise, regarding some sort of invasion or interaction would have been lost to us.
And at the same time, Sophia said, not to play devil's advocate, but we didn't exactly uncover anything about a new alien species in any of the emergency distress comms. You think that's something most people might mention if it was a cause for concern.
Now you'd think, Tag said, eyeing Corin suspiciously.
No explanation offered so far proved Corin was innocent in all of these matters. It seemed lucky, too lucky, that the mechanic had escaped such a violent uprising and returned to this planet to meet him here. Corin seemed to sense his skepticism and let out a long exhalation. It came out almost like a whistle through his flat nostrils.
I'm afraid the cutter you ran into was not from the mechanics you see on this planet. We're the victims, the survivors. As far as I know, we're the only ones left who haven't been converted or turned into drones or infected or whatever has happened to the rest of my people.
He leaned forward, holding his hands in a pleading gesture.
Despite what you might think, the mechanics are not a warfaring people. We protect our own. We defend ourselves when threatened. But the sneak attack on your vessel is unlike us. It is a dishonorable tactic. It is absolutely disgraceful to attack a research vessel, military or not, and massacre its crew without so much as a warning.
It's true, Sophia said. Everything I've seen in their ship's data library seems to support that notion. Granted, I haven't had time to go through a fraction of all the information stored there, but by every indication, they're an honorable, proud race. Deceit doesn't play such a large role in their history as it does ours, which makes the whole rebellion situation doubly strange.
I don't mean any offense to you or your profession, Tag started.
but one anthropologist's claim regarding a species she's only known about for... He looked to her for an answer. Roughly 6 months, she offered. Roughly 6 months. That's not enough for me to be convinced of anything, especially after what I saw.
I understand, Corin said. You have every right to be dubious, and I wouldn't respect you if you weren't. I sincerely apologize for our assault on your air car. Our guards have been jumpy ever since we crash-landed here.
Silence hung in the air as Tag studied Corin and Sophia. He tried to run through scenarios in his mind, figuring out what games these two, or maybe just Corin, were playing at. Why would they leave him alive? Why would Corin concoct this elaborate scheme? Corin sat on the stool again.
I failed my people. I was never meant to captain that ship, and without a working ship, it's hopeless. We'll die out here with no chance to reclaim our planet or our honor.
We might have a working ship now. Sophia's cot creaked as she leaned forward. A glint shone in her eyes. Tag, you didn't just transport out of nowhere. Tell us about the Argo.
The ship, Tag thought. Of course. That's what they want.
Corin needed that ship to get his people off the planet. Undoubtedly, the relentless snow, ice, and wind had covered the Argo by now. It would take months, if not years or decades, for the mechanics to dig through the snow and find it. Tag was the only living being who knew where the ship was buried. Corin wanted the ship. That was the only reason Tag was still alive.
Chapter 34. I can't give you the Argo, Tag said. Nothing you do to me will convince me otherwise.
Corin cocked his head, and his velvet fur creased across his forehead in shallow furrows.
I don't mean to abscond with your ship. You must believe me.
Believe you? I'm not falling for any of this treachery. Tag stood. Sophia, I don't know what he's said to you with that snake tongue, but I've seen the mechanics' true colors. They gassed my crewmates. They slaughtered them in the passages. They tried to drive the ship into ETA. They aren't good-natured or honorable. Far from it. Heat coursed across Tag's cheeks. He wasn't sure when he had clenched his fists, but his knuckles were white. The Argo didn't hold just the bodies of his crewmates, but also the coordinates of the Montenegro and the rest of human civilization's roots in the stars. Giving the mechanics the Argo meant giving them the keys to humanity's destruction. With his teeth gritted and eyes narrowed, he stared into Corin's good eye.
I don't know what kind of ruse you're trying to pull here. But kill me, if that's what you want. Torture me. I will not let you finish the job your people started. With my last dying breath, I'll defend the Argo.
Tag, Sophia said, getting up from her roost. She took a step between Tag and Corin, but the mechanic gestured her away.
How arrogant, human, Corin said, his voice dripping in measured calmness. Your skepticism has bloomed into paranoia. I've told you only the truth, but I can see there's nothing more I can say or do to prove that to you. It's a shame. Truly, I'd offer my help to get you off ETA-5.
Sure, Tag said with a hint of derision etching his voice. And you'd ask nothing in return?
It would be foolish of me not to. I would hope a gracious gesture would be repaid in kind. Surely the SRE could help us.
I told him I'd do what I can when I return to the Montenegro, Sophia said.
You told him about the Montenegro? Tag asked in disbelief.
Now he realized he needed to get the Argo spaceworthy as soon as possible. The capital ship had to be warned of the mechanic threat immediately.
This snake probably reported its location to the rest of the mechanics, and they're closing in on it as we speak.
It'll be destroyed, just like the Argo.
Corin shook his head. I assure you, no, Corin. Your assurances mean nothing to me.
Tag's mind raced. He wasted enough time enduring supposedly mistaken attacks on his air car and participating in tribal sacrifices. Then a new thought struck him. When he'd been brought here, he had been so distracted by the strange sights of the Forest of Light and the looming threats to his life that he'd been disoriented.
Sophia, do you know the quickest route to the surface?
We're not running away, Sophia said.
Please, Lieutenant Commander, Corin said. I insist you hear me out.
Tag grabbed Sophia's arm. Come on, we... She evaded his grip and pushed him. His mouth fell open in shock, unable to believe she'd been fooled by this snake person.
Tag, I understand what you've gone through, but we need to help them. It's not right to leave them here like this.
Tag was ready to protest, but he gazed between Corin and Sophia. They outnumbered him, and he'd waste even more time by trying to convince Sophia his skepticism wasn't misplaced. But even so, he wouldn't let himself be outwitted.
Fine. If you're true to your word, you'll let us go, and we'll send an aid envoy back.
It was never my intention to make you stay, Corin said.
Tag's eyes turned to slits as he evaluated Corin. The alien maintained an unreadable expression, better than any human poker player, making any attempt to discern truth from fiction almost impossible. Without being able to read Corin's true intent, Tag realized his life was still in the mechanic's hands. He reminded himself to stay cautious.
Is the Argo spaceworthy? Sophia asked. You said it was attacked.
No, Tag said, but with a few repairs from our bots, we can be flying again.
It's not just about repairing the damage, though, is it? Corin asked as if he already knew the answer. I'm afraid you can't rely on any bots or AI. I'm guessing those drone mechs that attacked the Argo inflicted an AI subversion routine on your ship's comm systems. They tried to do that to the stalwart, but I managed to establish working firewalls in time to ward them off. It sounds like, from your story, you weren't quite as successful as we were.
That's true, Tag said reluctantly.
I'm well aware this will only seem to support your hypothesis regarding my motives, Corin said. But I'd ask you to let me aboard your ship to fix what the drone mechs have done.
A plethora of reasons stormed through Tag's mind, reasoning why he should refuse this proposition.
But what did it matter?
Corin was right. Tag didn't know how to restore the ship's AI, but then again, he had attempted his own fixes. I've already created a new AI to monitor our repair bots and navigation systems. Corin's good eye widened and his mouth opened a bit, forming a recognizable look of surprise.
A new AI system? That seems a rather difficult procedure. One person developing a functional AI is an enormous feat of engineering, something that would impress even us.
Corin's tone conveyed that he didn't intend to sound derisive despite the slight barb. Tag went on. It wasn't truly my original design. I used biology. While keeping the finer details to himself, he summarized his initial hypothesis on the self-maturing AI of synth biotechnologies and his work with creating an artificial brain. Corin leaned forward, visibly impressed. Sophia, in contrast, pursed her lips.
It sounds feasible, but I think we both know how unreliable biology can be. You might design the perfect system, but tissue differentiation, epigenetics, or the normal learning process can drastically affect your expected outcomes.
The truth in that statement stung, stitching doubt through Tag's mind. Even in simple cellular experiments, he had often observed his synth neural networks took unexpected growth pathways and made connections he couldn't have predicted. The development of synth bio truly had been difficult to manage, and his memories of his last encounter with Alpha One were all too supportive of Sophia's conjecture.
How about this? Sophia asked. Corin goes with us. If your synth bio AI works, Then he comes back here. No questions asked. If we still need a little help, he stays and does just that.
You're really going to trust him? Tag asked. I've learned to since the Forinths welcomed them into the forest. I have had no choice but to trust them, and they've done nothing to abuse that trust.
Tag wanted to say no. Letting the enemy aboard the Argo was a surefire way to ensure he didn't make it to the Montenegro. And since the mechanics already knew about the ship, he had little time to waste. A plan started to hatch in his mind. It was crude, almost Philistine, but it would have to do. He'd let Corin fix the ship, and if Corin didn't repair the AI systems or proved treacherous in any way, he'd hold the mechanic prisoner. He prayed it didn't come to that, but it gave him some insurance against failure.
Fine. Come with us to the Argo, Tag said. Get us back into space.
Chapter 35.
I promise, Corin said. I will repair the damage the drone mechs inflicted.